Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
So Joe Maddon wins the World Series for the Cubs the first time in 100 years. And what happens? He gets fired. And Matt Nagy? Oh, Coach of the Year. Coach of the Year. Genius. And now they're treating him like a fool. And they're running him out of town. And now you have Eddie Johnson, superintendent of police, on his way out. Coaches and police chiefs are like the same thing. They get kicked. They're hired to be fired. They understand the game. It's big city politics, the Chicago way. They got it. And Eddie Johnson, when he first came here to the Chicago way, he talked about how he loved that show, The Wire, because it was so authentic. And it's really authentic in terms of the politics of police and of weasels in newsrooms. But what happens after Eddie? Where does Lori Lightfoot go? Does she go for a woke scold or a social justice warrior like Kim Fox, who wants, you know, to hug criminals and lower bonds, Tony Preckwinkle, Tim Evans, chief judge, and that sort of thing? Or does she go with a cop's cop? We're going to talk to Rafael Manguel of City Journal about this business of prosecutors elected throughout the country, including in Cook County, who are at odds with their police chiefs. And we're also going to be talking to the spiritual sister of the Chicago Way, Kristen McQuarrie, editorial board member and columnist herself, on that great column she had, What to Call the What to Call the Federal Investigation, perhaps Madigan Electric or Brigadoon, Operation Brigadoon, a reader said. We'll talk to them. And as always, my buddy, co-host, Jeff Carlin is here, the executive producer of the WGN Rokon Show with Anna DeVolantis. And me, I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist with the Chicago Tribune and member of its editorial board. And you know where you are? With the social justice warriors on one side and the cops on the other and the feds crawling all over Madiganistan. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
For those that survive a shooting, the wounds never truly heal. The victims of gun violence are often left physically or psychologically broken. So reducing these shootings in the city that I love has been one of the greatest accomplishments of my career. And it's with that in mind that I want to announce my retirement today. It's time for someone else to pin these four stars to their shoulders. These stars can sometimes feel like you're carrying the weight of the world.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
And now we're joined by Rafael Manguel, criminal policy analyst for the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor to its journal, the City Journal. Good day, Rafael.
Good day to you, sir.
We're talking to you as Eddie Johnson is taking that long goodbye. That happens to every police chief. So what do you think of the politics of all this?
the politics are really interesting from the outside, especially because New York City is actually, as you probably know, is going through its own transition at the moment, right? So the New York City Police Department just announced that James O'Neill is stepping down, and they've appointed Dermot Shea, who was the former chief of detectives. And I wrote a piece for City Journal about the New York story, and a lot of what I wrote, I think, applies to the situation here in Chicago. And that is, I think the public really needs to start tempering its expectations when it comes to police chiefs and what they can do to stem the tide of violent crime. When in cities like New York and Chicago, you've got a whole cohort of forces coming together to enact these very radical criminal justice reforms that are basically designed to frustrate the efforts of police. When I heard President Trump's criticisms of Eddie Johnson at the police chief's conference the other day, you know, I was really kind of disappointed, because it just doesn't seem to me like you can lay the blame at his feet for the crime problems that the city's, you know, experiencing right now, given the fact that, you know, his officers are consistently arresting and bringing, you know, hardened criminals before judges and prosecutors. And oftentimes it's the judges and prosecutors that are just letting them right back out on the street. And so, you know, the question I have, you know, for critics of Johnson's tenure is, you know, well, what else did you want him to do?
We talked about this, you and I, for a column I wrote a couple days ago on Eddie Johnson and the video, and how the video showing him passed out in his car was not going to help, and they could not survive that. But also the undemocratic attempts of social warriors like of the woke school in Chicago.
Right.
Kim Fox is the poster child for that here, prosecutor, state's attorney. But also in New York, in Queens, in Brooklyn, everywhere. Boston.
That's right. Boston, Philadelphia is probably one of the more kind of egregious examples, and Larry Krasner, who's been very open about his desire to extend, you know, the push for decarceration, you know, beyond the so-called nonviolent drug offender and apply it to even the most violent offenders in our country. I mean, you know, you've even got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Twitter adamantly defending the idea of prison abolition. You know, we're not far off from prison abolition becoming the next sort of standard position among the woke left. And, you know, the other thing, too, though, to consider is that there's some forces on the right as well that have been very supportive of this idea of kind of, you know, criminal justice reform through, you know, prosecutorial wokeness. And it really is undemocratic. It really does frustrate law enforcement's efforts to stem the tide of crime. And, you know, it has consequences. And in cities like Chicago and Philadelphia and Baltimore and St. Louis, those consequences are almost always going to be borne by the least fortunate among us. And these are exactly the kind of people that these woke prosecutors, you know, claim to be representing.
And to the Johnson point, too, I mean, people want to criticize him and say, oh, I mean, even the president, but that's his prerogative, you know, for other purposes. But
sure.
say this guy is, oh, he hasn't done anything right. You know, the city's in terrible shape. And okay, sure. But as he was quoted this week, there was a you know, city council event, and he was there, and he said, you know, yeah, I'm looking at retirement. I'm looking at moving on. He says, when I started this job in 1988, it was a different job.
You know, when I became a police officer in 1988, our mission was pretty clear. You know, people that broke the law, we arrested them. But now, unfortunately, we fast forward to the year 2019. It seems as though all societal ills are being dumped at the doorstep of the police department, and we're simply not trained to be able to engage in all those different areas.
He's dead on with that. People say, oh, the cops need to do more. Cops should be arresting bad guys, and end point, and they shouldn't be having to fix all these problems. They shouldn't be, oh, we blame them for not doing their job.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, I wrote something very similar in with respect to the situation in New York and the transition that city's undergoing. And, you know, what I wrote was basically like, look, you know, in New York, because we've had 25 years of consistent crime declines, we've kind of grown accustomed to the standard metric of whether a police commissioner was successful being whether crime went down. But the thing to remember is that, you know, for most of that 25-year stretch, there was you know, a consensus between police leaders, prosecutors, politicians, and the voting citizenry that the government's job was to catch criminals and incapacitate them when they were found guilty. And that we're now living in a kind of very fractured state where there's not a consensus on these things. And so, you know, again, you've got police officers arresting bad guys. I mean, how do we know this? I mean, just look at some of the criminal histories of you know, of these guys who keep getting caught for these really serious crimes. You know, in Chicago, the average number of prior arrests for someone who's convicted of a shooting or a homicide is 12. Right, so it's not like cops aren't concentrating their resources on, you know, some of these worst offenders. They most obviously are, but other parts of the system are failing, you know, to keep them locked up the way that they should.
Both of you, Raphael and Jeff, are referencing 50 to 100 years of failed liberal democratic policy, broken schools, fatherless homes. All of that is, you can attribute it to the trillions of dollars spent on anti-poverty programs that really were about keeping poor people on the government teat and keeping them subservient to the Democratic Party. And now I see we reap what we sow. And blaming a police officer for that is, to me, ridiculous. But that's the politics. And Raphael, one of the things you mentioned that I quoted you in a recent column about Johnson was that it's an undemocratic business to have stealth candidates, stealth woke warriors running for prosecutor like Kim Fox, and then they decide what the law is going to be or how they will enforce the law rather than have an open public debate in which legislators can change the law or not, depending on how many votes they get to do this policy or that. It's almost like the federal administrative state in Washington doing the same thing, deciding, we're going to decide what the foreign policy is of the United States, not you elected officials.
At the very least, unlike with the administrative state, you know, these prosecutors are elected. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, to their credit, have been pretty open in terms of their, you know, their platforms as candidates about, you know, what they were intending to do. I mean, if you take the case of like Rachel Rollins in Boston, she was very open. She put out a memo listing, I think, like 22 offenses that her office would refuse to prosecute should she get elected. You know, so there is some sense of transparency there. And I do think voters bear responsibility for this. But no, I do think that you're right. There is a very large undemocratic element to this because, you know, while I'm not sure there's a legal remedy, the fact of the matter is that our system was designed to change policy through the political process. And I think that a lot of these reformers grew frustrated with the speed of that progress or the lack thereof, and figured out that, you know, they could just change this from the inside by shifting their focus. And so you're seeing a lot of you know, left-leaning donors pouring a lot of money into these, you know, prosecutor races, even in small jurisdictions. And they're making progress. And I think part of it is because a lot of people just haven't really caught on to what's going on. What's really interesting to me, though, is that, you know, you've got so many of these big cities now under the thumb of these, you know, reformer prosecutors, yet the rhetoric in those cities hasn't really shifted away from, you know, the constant drum beating that the criminal justice system is, you know, racially oppressive and overly draconian. You know, at some point, someone should point out that, well, you know, you've got your candidate in.
And not only do you have your candidate in, but your candidate, woke warrior, George Soros backed Kim Fox or whoever the prosecutor is who is at basically at war with law enforcement.
That's right.
What they do is they, by their policies, their liberal policies, they allow the violent to go back to poor neighborhoods and victimize the voiceless and powerless among us. Case in point, you made the other day, Brittany Hill, 24, shot to death on the West Side just a few months ago.
Yep.
Here in Chicago, holding her little baby. She was holding the baby away from the gunfire. She was shielding the child with her body. Well, okay, she's dead. And two men were charged with murder. Both of them repeat felons, violent felons. One of them, Mr. Washington, Michael Washington, 39, was out on attempted murder. He had already been convicted of an attempted, of second-degree murder. Not attempted, right. Second degree. And multiple right. gun and narcotics arrests. So, and I'm not,
nine felony convictions Washington did. I mean, it's crazy.
I'm not blaming Kim Fox personally for that, because some of that happened before her tenure, but
right.
the attitude, and I think part of it is journalism too. We have beats like social justice beats. I don't know what that means. It's like equity. What the hell are right. you talking about? What does that mean, really? Just say right. what it is. But
yeah,
it's,
I mean, well, the thing that gets missed is that, you know, there's actually a lot of space between how punitive and draconian the reformers say the criminal justice system is and how things actually work in reality, right? You know, according to the reformers' rhetoric, there is no way that a nine-time convicted felon whose record includes a conviction for second-degree murder should ever see the light of day or would ever see the light of day. Yet, we know by looking at the records of these repeat offenders who commit these crimes that, in fact, you know, not only can you, you know, commit a nonviolent drug offense and get out, you can commit very serious violent felonies and be back out on the street in a relatively short period of time. And so, you know, the rhetoric just really hasn't caught up to that. And I fear that where we're headed is just to a place where it's just, you know, consistent movement to the, you know, toward decarceration until you kind of get to nothing. I mean, take, again, New York City, for example. Both New York City and New York State have significantly decarcerated over the last 20 years. I think the state prison population has gone down about 30%, and the city jail population has gone down probably more than 50% in that time. Yet, people still say that New York City has a mass incarceration problem. It's like, well, from what point then can we say that we've cut this enough? I mean, you've got 95% or so of New York City's jail population facing, you know, serious felony charges. Most of those are violent charges, and people are still complaining that we're throwing too many people behind bars. And so I just don't think we're ever going to get to a point where the reformers are satisfied on this, at least the more radical among them.
And it's evident in Chicago, where you see business owners who have people come into their store and steal just shy of $1,000 worth of goods. And the prosecutors are like, well, you know, it wasn't $1,000, so it's no big deal. You know, we're not going to put any effort in to catch that. And those are the people who are being almost, you know, rant new. I mean, it's new, a new kind of concept that they're seeing what the writing on the wall. Well, I'm not going to get in trouble, so I might as well keep going for it. And right. those are the people that are suffering. And I want to acknowledge there are a lot of problems with the way people are incarcerated in this country and sure. the big business behind it and keeping people in for things that they probably shouldn't be. But to your point, 90% of people in prison and jails in New York are violent criminals and they're violent acts. We don't want those people on the street. Those people are clearly not societal benefiters.
And who are they right. hurting? Who are they hurting? Are they really coming down Lincoln Park and hurting some investment banker? No. Who are they hurting, Raphael?
Exactly. Well, they're hurting their neighbors. They're hurting members of their own communities that already have enough to deal with, right? I mean, you know, this is the thing that really frustrates me about this, is because, you know, these radical reformers, they claim to speak for vulnerable communities. But if you look at crime trends, not just, you know, in the United States, but in Chicago as well, what you find is that the most serious crime is concentrated in the most vulnerable neighborhoods, right? Again, it's not Lincoln Park or Lakeview or Streeterville, you know, that's going to see a big crime spike pursuant to these policies. It's going to be neighborhoods like Austin and Inglewood and Humboldt Park. And, you know, it really does raise the transaction cost of everyday life. And, you know, it's a shame because no one calls them out on this. And for some reason, they seem to have the monopoly on, you know, on what's moral and just. And, you know, I really do think, you know, we need to just keep pushing back on that narrative because it's hogwash.
It's hogwash because many of my colleagues in the media, I'm not just speaking of my own paper, but everywhere, are woke warriors at heart. Somehow journalism got lost and the woke warrior mentality took over because it's clicks. And the poor people, the people who need the help the most, the poor and the powerless and the voiceless, they're ignored in favor of politics. We've been speaking with Raphael Manguel, husband, dad, I like that, man. Legal policy and criminal justice analyst for the Manhattan Institute and contributing editor to City Journal. He loves baseball. Too bad you don't love soccer, man. You can find him on Twitter at Rafa, R-A-F-A, underscore, Manguel, capital M-A-N-G-U-A-L. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us, and good luck to the Manhattan Institute, which I identified in the paper as conservative, because when I talk to think tanks, I actually don't say experts say. I identify liberal and conservative. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that. Thanks again for having me on,
John. Wise guys never compromise. Then they lose their rights and they act surprised. Jail really cuts you down to the size. Let the punishment fit the crime.
Our next guest is the, as I told you on Facebook, I hope you're all primed for it, the one and only Kristen McQuarrie.
Hello. I'm not the one and only, though. There's a Kristen McQuarrie in Las Vegas who's a gambling attorney. Isn't that funny? Same spelling.
Huh.
And her name pops up all the time because she represents a bunch of casino operators, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a Jeff Carlin in Alaska who flies planes.
Wow.
There's a John Kess who sells records in Minneapolis, and I think there's also one who is a porn star.
Huh.
But
wow.
I don't like that idea.
Hmm.
Anyway, okay, we're talking to the real Kristen McQuarrie.
Triumphant return.
And also, I just have to comment on the Twitter handle. It is now?
At McQuarrie Kristen. Yeah, I was State House chick, and I liked it. But it was assigned to me at a previous employer when Twitter was kind of new and we were trying to drum up interest in our Twitter handles. And I cover a lot more than just the State House. And you can't really, it's hard to find me sometimes if you're searching. So I just went with my actual name for my Twitter handle now.
All right. So I asked people, and I really think that's professional and the right way to go.
Yeah.
Because as journalists, we represent the Chicago Tribune, the world's greatest newspaper, and I really like that. McQuarrie Kristen.
Yep, that's what it is.
All right, so.
Although I don't get bothered by being called a chick or, you know, I don't get into all that politically correct stuff, but yes, it's no longer my Twitter handle.
It is odd, isn't it, that you don't get all freaked out that you're, what? Do you feel sad that you're not a woke warrior?
What does that mean exactly?
Well, I don't know, just. You can go in any newsroom and find them everywhere. All right, so we're going to read, as I asked people on Facebook, Kristen had this great column on the Madigan federal investigation of Illinois corruption that is sprawling.
Shocked, I'm telling you.
And it rolls from Chicago to Springfield and back again through the suburbs. I've said it's the bus, you know, driven by RICO. Kristen had a genius column where she asks, what is the proper name for this investigation without a name? And you suggested Operation Fixed.
If they're going to take a kind of just a widespread city and state title that captures what this whole investigation about, it just is about the fix of government, that it's not open to everyone. There's a price to be paid. It's a closed network. If you want to participate in state government, you have to abide by the rules of a fixed system.
And you go to the boss, the Khan of Madiganistan, and you touch your forehead three times to the ground and say, I'm a loyal Democrat. That's why I should be a judge. And it just proceeds from there. Also, I thought it was kind of a hat tip to a friend of ours who started a campaign for governor as a saying he was born a poor black child.
Right.
Remember when he was mocking all the other Republicans talking about their rags to riches stories? And has always said, Illinois is not broken, it's fixed.
Right.
Right, Danny?
Yep. Dan, 2008, came up with that slogan. It still works.
Yeah.
Because
he had to come up with one that was different from my slogans.
Which was?
Well, you know, the combine and everything like that. But he had to find his
own
way.
That's a perfect one, too, the combine. I think this investigation into Madagascar will show how much of a bipartisan combine they're not going to be. Republicans are going to be caught up in all this as well.
I would hope so. Just for like equity, which is a word that we use now, equity.
Well, it's really about power. And even Republicans in their minority state in the state of Illinois, they still get deals cut for them. They still get relatives appointed to the Illinois Tollway Board and all these little nests around state government.
The people on Facebook came up with some names for Kristen's for the investigation. One said, Ed Burton said, Operation Brigadoon, because something like this appears once every 100 years.
Mm.
Another said, Harry Politi said, Operation Friends of Mike. Brian Landstrom says, Operation All the King's Men. And then comes to Kim Ann Marie, who said, wish I could get to the story, but since the Tribune blocks it in an attempt to get a subscription, I guess I will miss it. Sorry. I said I don't work for free.
Yeah, and pay the $15 for the digital subscription, people.
And she said, people said, well, listen to the Chicago Way, because that's free. And Kim Ann Marie says, and we share family as Kristen is the sister of a wonderful woman who is my nephew Troy Roberts' wife.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God, you should see Kristen's face. I should almost take a photograph of her, just like she did one of me where I was sitting on Eric Zorn's left. And she put that out.
Did you tweet that? I did not.
Oh, thank God.
Okay. No, I just put it. I just sent it to you guys. I would like to tweet it out. It's a great picture of the two of them in a meeting. You're both sitting behind framed art. You both look sort of sour. And you have coffee cups and newspapers in front of you. It's just a perfect journalism photo. Two newspaper men.
Well,
very different views of the world.
Yes, completely. 180 degrees.
So you can, so I can't post it anywhere.
I'm not going to tell anyone what to do.
Okay.
But you should have seen Kristen's face when I mentioned this wonderful woman who is my nephew Troy Roberts' wife. See, I should get the friends and family plan.
Oh,
LOL.
That must be a relative of my sister's
perhaps
husband's.
It's a nice in-law who wants to participate.
Wants babysat,
but she can't because cousin. Yeah, you have to.
Okay,
have
and for the record, I have to pay for a subscription. So
right, everyone.
Nah. So do I.
We
don't get any discounts.
I also get the paper delivered.
Yeah, it's expensive. Gets expensive, but it's worth it.
Sunday.
I get the Sunday paper.
What about Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday?
I don't think that's a package.
Used to be a package.
It did.
That's why they put
that way. The cast special.
That's why they gave me that schedule because they wanted to push the paper on those days.
You suggested Operation Madigan Electric.
That's my favorite.
I like that. I mean, ComEd is going to be very much wrapped into.
I think an Operation Electric Combine.
Oh, nice.
Can we say what Kristen said on Twitter? I think it was after Ben Bradley said Operation Apple Tree.
Yes.
Kristen said Operation Happy Endings. Did you say
it's a reference to a very public beginning of this investigation.
I mean,
involving,
it's really a beginning and an ending, you know.
Right, exactly. Danny Solis.
In the dark of the city, backwards, something stirs, then slips away. Law and order in darkest nights, bridge, crime and punishment at play. Hey, Mr. Policeman, won't you come on over? Up here up to the power lines of your love.
Where does it go?
Where does it go? I mean, it's everywhere right now. In terms of that raid on all those South Suburban communities, you had the feds showing up at the homes of these mayors and elected officials in the dark, in the morning, taking their cell phones, putting them in their law enforcement vehicle, driving them to City Hall, you know, raiding, searching, taking equipment. That is a pretty scary thing. If you've been doing something wrong in some of these towns. So from what I understand, I mean, there is a grand jury, possibly two. These are two separate investigations. They actually have separate prosecutors, one doing kind of the Madigan ComEd side and one doing the Martin Sandoval speed camera side. And I think it's just going to be similar to what happened with George Ryan, where he was never, you know, implicated directly. They didn't catch him on tape saying anything. They never caught him with a bribe, but they were able to paint a picture over the course of, I think there were like 80 indictments in Operation Safe Road.
Using RICO,
that state government had basically become a criminal enterprise. You couldn't lease property unless you gave him a kickback. You couldn't get a driver's license unless you contributed to George Ryan's fund.
If you were an illegal immigrant, you could contribute, and then
yes,
you could kill people in a car.
Exactly. Willis family became symbolic of that whole investigation. Right. So that's where I think this is headed.
I do too. I'm interested in the overlap between Sandoval, Madigan, and then this is the jackpot, Louis Arroyo. You have Happy Endings, Danny Solis, who should be charged with something by the end of this. You got Ed Burke, and we don't know where else it'll go. And Tom Cullerton,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Cullerton's cousin.
Oh.
We don't know where else it will go. We don't know, you know, if it were me, I would be looking at that bank in Bridgeport where that fellow, the depositor, decided to kill himself at the home of the bank manager, right?
Carrie Austin, separate raid mm-hmm. on her home, is supposedly ensnaring some of her associates in real estate deals. I mean, just looking at the breadth of this over the past year, we're just now coming up on a year when Ed Burke's office was papered over and everyone sort of realized this had been what was going on. Over the course of a year, they have just not held back. The feds have been everywhere. And I think we're going to keep seeing that. We just saw, Representative Arroyo was actually arrested. Was he arrested? He was charged. I'm not sure
He
turned himself in. So then we can't
use the word arrested. Well, he was arrested, and then they let him turn himself in. I think they raided him. They had him.
Right. That's right. They approached him on a Friday.
Jason explained.
And then they allowed him to leave and then turn himself in on Monday.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just been every few days, every week, there's somebody else who goes down. And if people are talking, which I believe they are at this point,
mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see just a continuation of this activity. Now, again, we've only had maybe like 6 indictments total. A lot of activity, a lot of suspicion, only 6 people actually charged and indicted. So I think we'll see more of that.
It is an investigation, as we've talked about before here, not about just low-hanging fruit. This is about power, very powerful people. They have gotten governors before. You referenced Ryan and Blagojevich have both been taken down by the feds. But they're just the titular heads of government, really. I mean, they were not the real mechanics. The real mechanics, whether they're guilty or not, charged or not, Madigan, Burke, drawing the maps, all the maps of Illinois started that, you know, house on the southwest side, for everything. Now, we have maps that will be drawn soon.
Mm-hmm.
Will Madigan be drawing the maps while he's talking to criminal lawyers? How does that work?
I don't know how. It depends on how close this gets to him. The map drawing process the census will take place next year, 2020, where they divide up the population across the country, and then they will start drawing the maps in 2021, that January, and probably approve something before the legislature leaves in May. The question with all of that is, also, Governor Pritzker has been on record saying he will not sign a partisan map. Governor Quinn said the same thing and then just rolled over and signed it anyway. So,
Governor Pritzker is very Governor Braveheart lately, isn't he? Talking about how dare you get out. He's talking, Sandoval had to go. Arroyo had to go. He's holding news conferences. This is delicate for me because there's certain people I like involved here. But Mike Zalewski, who I've known for 25, 30 years, former alderman of the 23rd Ward, which is now Madigan Southwest Ward, he was raided.
Yes.
And his daughter-in-law I mean, this is all about lobbying and ComEd and everything. Pritzker put his daughter-in-law, Carrie, on the as chairman of the Illinois Commerce Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't heard anything, not that she's done anything wrong. No one's charged her with anything. No one suggests it. But I haven't heard anyone, I mean, except for me, skunk at the garden party.
You are a skunk at the garden party.
Bringing that up, why is that, like, there's certain things you don't bring up?
I mean, I think it's just part of the from what I understand, she's a very, very capable lawyer, first of all. So it's different. To me, it's a little different than someone getting scooted into a primo position with, you know, just because they're somebody's kid. But
it's not like she got all the insurance business from all the Southwest.
which the Tribune, you know, the Tribune reported that 4 or 5 years ago.
David
about
Kidwell.
Was it David?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all of these stories, in fact, we should bundle them because a lot of the thread of what is happening now has been uncovered by the Tribune Newsroom, and they could only take those stories so far. You know, 400 people throughout government.
We don't have subpoena power.
Associated with Madigan. And he was so mad about all those series, Mike Madigan. He was writing letters. He refused to speak to us.
Can I tell you a story about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Years ago, around that time, there was a dinner. And the publisher of the Chicago Tribune then was Tony Hunter. And Tony was invited to a dinner to get an award, some peace award. And everybody was there. And I, you know, the Tribune, would you like to attend this dinner? You know, you get these notices. And so I was there, and other top editors were there. The boss was getting an award. We had dinner. You could see top churchmen, every consul general from all the countries in Chicago were there. I mean, this was, Mike Madigan was there. Supreme Court justices were there. It was everybody.
Wow.
And Tony gets this award. And Madigan, at that time, boss Madigan, was peeved at the Chicago Tribune, right, for what we were doing. And Tony gets the award, and the award was about journalism and, you know, getting to the truth of things. And he stood up there. I've never seen, this is why I love Tony, because he's a Southside guy. He came up from the ranks, from the trucks, to become publisher. You know, he wasn't like some Silver Spoon Lake Forest type. And Tony Hunter looks at the crowd, and he looks at Madigan. Right, Madigan's standing there, right, sitting there, right in front of the podium. Tony Hunter, he said, and, you know, there's some people who think that we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. And he's staring right at Madigan. And he said, but I've got some advice for you. We're not finished yet. And I thought, schwing. As a journalist, I was like, there's my boss, a publisher standing up to the most powerful person in the state. And I just thought, is that cool or what? Or is that just me?
No, that is. I love that because, I mean, the Tribune and other media outlets, they're not, I can't say that the Tribune is, but just generally speaking, they're also titans of industry in this city.
Yeah.
And so too often they're kind of in bed together, or there's like a wink nod thing that goes on.
Yeah.
It hasn't at the paper under any of the publishers that I've worked under. I did love Tony. He was one of the people who would always pop in my office when he knew that you wrote something that was controversial, difficult, taking on the powers that be, you're getting beat up on social media, whatever. He was always one of those people to step in and say, keep going. Great job. And that's appreciated as a reporter, as
that's
you know.
That's right. And I appreciate it too. And, you know, our current publisher, Bruce Dold, the editor and publisher of the Tribune, never has ever said to me, don't write this or write that. They don't do that. I mean, people have a weird understanding of journalism. They think that your boss tells you what to write.
I know.
It's have you not ever had that?
No. I can tell you in 25 years that I've been a reporter, 26, or worked at newspapers, I had an editor at a paper a long time ago who did assign something to me. It still fit in the realm of what I was covering. I was covering politics, but it was sort of It felt a little slimy. I want you to write a profile of this person. She's kind of a rising star. And she was, and so it didn't, but it was the first, it was the only time a management person actually said, write this. Because normally we come up with our own ideas, we bounce ideas off the editors, but there's no directive. And no, Bruce is, he's pedal to the metal. He does not, I mean, the editorial page, as you know, is extremely controversial. CTU strike, we were just gassing it big time.
And you got beat up
and
personally.
He supports him. Yeah, well.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah. It was more of the CTU, you know, big union playbook, where if they can discredit the people who are calling them on their BS, then it's not BS, you know. And it was disgraceful. I mean, Don and I have talked about this, but we talk a lot of teachers who were out there striking, and every time they would come to you, you'd say, well, what do you want? And then you got the same bullet points, and then you ask them on, and there was nothing beneath it. They couldn't go deep on anything. It was stuff that they were clearly given, and you could see it in the way people were attacking Kristen on Twitter, that it was a lot of the same thing, that there was somebody somewhere was leading the charge on this, and people were following suit and being like, oh my God, you know, it's just terrible. How dare you? Don't you hate kids kind of stuff? And you're like, what are you doing? It's so disgusting.
I mean, I was actually surprised it took them a few days, because I wrote a column saying something nice about Betsy DeVos, and she is hated. She is hated in the public school movement. I think she's been admirable in the school choice movement. But I knew saying anything nice about her was going to just make them crazy. So,
and she somehow retweeted.
She retweeted my column, and that's when it landed on their radar. Yeah.
You know, just for all the woke scolds, I've been getting some of it too. People put out my town, where I live, my house. I just wonder, what do they want? They want, what's next? You know, and this is like a journalist from The Reader who's done this. Do you want people to come to my home? Are you going to put the roadmap to my home, maybe to my back door at night when I'm sleeping? I mean, what do you really want?
They want you to shut up, and they want you to go away. And that's when you just, you come back harder. Because they have, I mean, I can't even believe The Reader gets away with some of the crap that they print. They went after you. They've gone after like entire neighborhoods of the city.
Yeah.
And because they're like hipsters or something, they get away with it. But it's completely lazy, awful, vindictive reporting.
They used to have a lazy journalism critic who was basically lazy. And I wonder now with The Reader, and now he's gone, but I wonder with The Reader, they have the owner of The Reader is Elsie Higginbottom.
I didn't know that.
Elsie and Lori Lightfoot was on this program on our show just months ago, and she lit him up, and she said, yeah, just so you know, that there were people when she was at purchasing, there were people that fought her and went to Daily to muscle her. And she goes, I haven't forgotten them. And when I look at them now, I look at them, Jeff's looking for that tape now, they avert their eyes. Mm-hmm. And I said, who? And she said, Elsie Higginbottom. And I was like, whoa. I didn't say anything. I just let it there. And then she comes back and says, and you know what? He has a lot of CHA contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa. Now that's the young newbie mayor at the time who has to learn that if you call somebody out that powerful, you better be ready to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's learning stuff. And now with the selection of a new superintendent of police,
mm-hmm,
I ask you, Kristen McQuarrie, does she go social justice warrior Kim Fox mold, or does she go police officer, cop mode?
Cops cop. I mean, I think she needs to pull from within the ranks of the CPD. She talked at one of our board meetings about how it's, you know, everyone, or Tony Preckwinkle when she was running, get rid of Eddie Johnson. It's a hard position to fill. You can do a nationwide search and maybe find three or four people who are even capable of that job. I always think it's best to pull someone within the department. It doesn't have to be some big name. It doesn't have to be a hotshot from New York. We've tried that. But I think it has to be someone respected within the police department, and she's moving in that direction.
Kristen McQuarrie.
John Cass. Jeff Carlin. Thank you for joining us on this edition of The Chicago Way.
And you brought some eggs, too.
I did.
You know, that is awesome. She brought us some farm eggs. So I'm bringing them home.
Oh, yes.
Make, I just, all I need is some feta, onions, and tomatoes, and I got an omelet.
Yep.
You are so cool.
It'll be delicious.
Thanks, Kristen, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Our special thanks to Rafael Mengual, criminal justice policy analyst for the Manhattan Institute and contributor to the City Journal. And to Kristen McQuarrie, columnist of the Chicago Tribune and member of its editorial board, who brought Jeff and I a bribe. Yeah, a bribe. She brought us a dozen eggs each. Farm fresh eggs. And I can't wait to make an omelet out of it. And I'm just thinking of what Robert De Niro, the sainted Robert De Niro, the good one, when he was good, played a devil on Angel Heart with Mickey Rourke, who hadn't yet destroyed his face with plastic surgery.
Are you afraid?
Yeah, I'm afraid.
I'll instruct my lawyer immediately to send you a check for $5,000. If you don't want the job, I'll engage someone else.
$5,000? $5,000. You must want this, Johnny, pretty bad, huh?
I don't like messy accounts. You know, some religions think that the egg is the symbol of the soul. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Would you like an egg?
No, thank you. I got a thing about chickens.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Way down in the hole.